like 50% still.
You think he was?
Probably. Who's got that kind of time?
I mean, honestly, at some point, he may not have even been exaggerating as much as just lost count. Like once you lose count, when you hit like quadruple digits, you can't recount it. You have to start estimating at that point. You're doing guesswork.
And that is why it is important to journal.
It's also important to let people know this KSP in Los Angeles. Mm. KRDC AM 1110 Pasadena and Los Angeles.
Good evening, Laker fans, and welcome to Crypto.com Arena on what could be a historic night.
Will be.
Rudy Ortiz, and I'm from Lancaster, California.
Congratulations, King. Let's go.
Justin Gonzalez from Lake Elsinore, California. Hey, man, great respect. 20 years, 20 plus years doing this, man, and I hope you break the record tonight. Deserve it all. Hard work, dedication pays off, man, and just congrats to you.
Picked up by Westbrook. Here come the Lakers 4-on-2. LeBron down the middle to the rim and in. 6 points away. Westbrook to LeBron. Put it up and in. 4 points away. 32 in the game for LeBron.
I'm Zach Khalifa. I'm from Australia, Sydney.
Australia, look at that.
Congratulations, King.
I came all the way from Australia to see you break the record.
Just to watch the record. Can't wait. So excited.
Dominique Corsall from Rancho Cucamonga, California. Congratulations, King. Hey, LeBron, I've been your biggest fan, one of your biggest fans ever since high school. I'm glad to see you break the record right here in L.A.
Here come the Lakers with 25 seconds remaining in the quarter. Westbrook with it. Give it to LeBron at the right elbow. LeBron, one-on-one against Kenrick Williams. Backing him in. Turns. Shoots. Score! There it is!
Oh, hey, the new king in town.
All hail, the new king in town. Young and old, gather round.
Young and old, gather round.
From one iconic Laker to another.
The king is now on top of his throne.
Congratulations, King.
Congratulations, King.
Congratulations, King.
Congratulations to LeBron James, making history last night at Crypto.com.
LeBron James has passed the captain.
Today, we celebrate the King with a commercial-free Celebration Wednesday. Celebrating the King making history with 38,388 straight seconds of non-stop, commercial-free, mega sports talk. A commercial-free Celebration Wednesday on the home of the King, 710 ESPN.
I have to admit, I missed the Morales one. It's not the same.
He does a good job.
Though. Does excellent work.
By the way, in the break, I was eating, and Pizza Hut was kind enough to send some food over earlier during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I dipped into the blazing sauce.
Ooh.
My God.
Oh, wait, did you have Pizza Hut?
I'm sorry, it's Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes.
They were both here.
So you had the blazing sauce?
I did not realize Buffalo Wild Wings was here. I just thought that was the new pizza.
I'm sorry, Andy, you had the blazing sauce?
Yes, I did.
That's the hottest one they have.
I did not realize they meant it.
They have something called the Blazing Challenge where they have like people eat like 12 wings of that to see how long it can
last. Is that like that hot sauce show?
Yeah, no, but like, so we had a remote, right? And Mason tried to eat one. He literally had a bite. He was like, I'm done. So I ate like four.
Is this thing that I'm holding, it's like, it looks like a hot dog.
It's the, where's Carlo? He knows the actual name because I don't want to butcher it. But yeah, it's like a chicken tender and a hot dog. What is it called?
That's a fascinating
idea.
Bird dog.
It's a bird dog.
That's a great idea.
Well,
let
me tell you right now.
I would
now,
eat it, but it's probably been here a minute.
The blazing sauce.
No one touched it. You want me to reheat it for you?
No, you should.
Don't
need to be running errands for me.
No, trust.
Maybe after the show.
Do those wings cool? Do they actually cool your mouth at all? Because I'll eat them. Yeah, look, the blazing sauce tastes great, but woo.
We have a gallon of milk in the refrigerator. It can cool you down.
Ew.
I hate milk.
Yeah, me too. Gross.
I hate
just
milk
get
and
ice.
Ketchup. Those are the things you don't like.
Oof.
You don't like ketchup?
No, he's got a ketchup phobia.
Hate.
Do you like tomato?
God.
Hate ketchup. All right, is Allie joining us?
She's going to join us in a second.
We're going to hear from Allie Clifton over at Spectrum Sportsnet, hosts Access Lakers. She hosts the Lakers postgame show. She hosts the Road Tripping podcast. She's awesome. She covered LeBron when he was, I believe, his second tour with the Cavaliers. I don't think Allie is old enough to have covered LeBron during the first tour.
No, I don't believe so.
She was probably.
She
like,
might have gone to games.
As you guys, as Funchy's getting her on the phone for us, I still want to run back this whole you don't like ketchup thing.
Do you
like tomato, though?
Depends on what you're doing with the tomatoes. I like salsa.
Okay.
I like
everything,
marinara
nothing
sauce.
Nothing that isn't family friendly.
I like blazing hot sauce. I don't like sliced tomatoes.
Okay.
Like the more the ketchup takes on, or I was going to say the more the tomatoes take on more complicated flavors and they're just sort of the base of it,
uh-huh.
I like them. The okay. more they're either just straight tomatoes or ketchup, which is basically tomatoes and sugar.
Yeah, that is true.
I think ketchup, though, like the consistency is gross. I think visually it's gross.
You're weird.
You're going to hate me.
More
I put ketchup all over my eggs.
More to sesquophobia.
Oh, wait, fine. Well, anyways,
is
Allie's
the fear
on
of
the
ketchup.
Phone. Yeah, Allie's on the phone. We don't need to.
Allie, how do you fear about ketchup?
How do you
ketchup?
Fear ketchup, Allie?
I don't fear it, actually. I thoroughly was enjoying that conversation, guys. And I will eat ketchup on anything and everything, including my mashed potatoes and noodles.
Oh, noodles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's.
I am a big ketchup fan.
That's inappropriate.
That's.
Oh.
You know we
I'm
love
not
you.
Even. I'm not even Italian, and I find that deeply offensive.
We know. You
like
know.
Corn,
that.
What
are you,
like,
are you nine?
I mean, I would love to be that young again. But no, I truly, ever since I was nine, though, I think that's when I first probably started eating ketchup on everything. I kid you not.
What are you irrationally afraid of? Other than Robert Ory.
Let's just stick with that, Robert Ory. There's not a lot. I actually just had a moment the other day talking to a friend of mine. And remember that show X Factor? I don't even know if that's still...
I think so.
If it still exists. I used to watch it all the time. But like there, I'm not sure there's many things that I wouldn't dare try or do or that would really scare me.
If you got a couple minutes, come by and try the blazing sauce.
Ooh, Allie, they are not joking over at Buffalo Wild Wings when they call that thing blazing. Like it is
Ooh, B-dub.
Hot.
I'm all for it. Love me some B-dubs.
All right. Well,
I do too.
We'll save you one.
All right. So you have been around LeBron going back to the second stint in Cleveland, correct?
Correct.
So, like, what's going through your mind last night when you're seeing LeBron make history like this, given the time you've been around him, given how you've watched his career, given that you're an Ohio native? Like, how do you feel about all this?
Look, I think that's kind of the unique perspective for myself is it's not – for me, it's like my whole family in the state of Ohio. I come from a family of just athletes. My parents play college sports, my sister, my brother – and we've just known and watched this man grow and be a part of like our living room for so long. And I always had those moments, even in Cleveland, my parents reminded me of them, like the pinch me moments. And so to be a part of even like the championship then, and then obviously you fast forward and these milestones that continue to just kind of add up and look for any player that has remained and been a part of a league for this long, certainly you'd imagine that they will always be there, especially at this stage of his career. But leading up to this moment last night, I actually was alongside of him, I believe it was in Philadelphia for 25,000 points, in San Antonio when he got 30,000. And then obviously here with the Lakers at 35, and you're just continuing to watch this. And I think we said it on air, I've never seen him that emotional. And I think that moment told you everything you needed to know and where I appreciated it the most, because we all get this kind of glimpse into the grind that he allows us to see. And to be overcome by that emotion, I was appreciative that he took it upon himself to kind of enjoy it,
mm-hmm.
despite everything else that was surrounding it, because he is a winner first. And that is the focus and the priority. But like I was telling Robert Ory, moments like last night, that's not about this single season. That's an entire career. That's dating back to those early sacrifices and et cetera. So for me, I thought it was special. I kind of got a little bit emotional, if you will, just in a sense of, wow, I'm proud. I'm proud to know that I've been a part of the very small part of this latter part of his career and just kind of have that up close seat to a little bit of greatness, if you will.
That was actually one of my, I think the thing that I liked most about it was, like, you know, when he starts talking in the postgame about all the people that were there that night, and, you know, it was obviously, you know, it's his friends, it's his mom, it's his children, it's his wife. But then you, not everybody knows, you know, the Walker family, these people who took him in and, you know, taught him basketball and all these, like, all of these people. He literally flew in, like, everyone who has helped him get to this place. And I don't want to turn his life story into, like, a TV movie or make it sound cliche or whatever, but, like, this movie, so to speak, could have ended and probably would have ended in 1,000 other ways that weren't this most of the mm-hmm. time. Like, there was nothing about the way LeBron was able to overcome what he did as a kid and the circumstances that he was raised in as a kid to get to here. Nothing about that, even with his talent, was fixed. And I think for him to reflect on it, it was one of the times where, you know, the kid from Akron stuff felt really meaningful in ways that go well beyond sometimes, like, just sort of the branding when he talks about it.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I do a podcast called Road Trippin', and I feel like it was during that time especially where I grew kind of a friendship in a sense with LeBron. And when you talk about those family members and you talk about him overcoming odds and something that he speaks very proudly on, I go back to an episode. We were actually on the airplane flying to a city, and he told Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye, I believe Kyrie Irving, J.R. Smith, were all in the pod at this time, that if it weren't for his mom in fourth grade, who helped him to do a stack of extra credit, he wouldn't have made it past fourth grade at that time. And you think of those moments, something that can be so little, and you fast forward to then putting it all together in this amazing, incredible thing we call the game of basketball, right? And what he's able to do then with the, I promise, all the stuff off the court. Mm-hmm. To your point, it could have gone so many other ways. And the one way that is truly special, truly genuine, truly just so, I don't even know how to describe it. Truly, I'm out of words with it when you kind of take it all in as a whole and as one. It's remarkable. And I think that's what kind of sets him apart for so many other people. It's not in just one facet. We all often talk about him being a triple threat, a versatile basketball player, but that's in life too. And there are those moments where I think he's, like, letting us in here at this stage of his career, and it's special. It's fun, you know?
Talking with Allie Clifton, host of Spectrum Sportsnet, host of the Road Trippin' podcast, also host of the Lake Show podcast. Basically, everything you can find over at Spectrum Sportsnet, Allie is in the middle of it. I thought it was really appropriate, Allie, that the shot that put LeBron over the top and set the record was that turnaround jumper, just because that used to be the type of shot that teams would dare LeBron to take. Like, that was the strategy. You want him taking that. And it just speaks to the work that went into, you know, not just being, like, this freak otherworldly athlete, but this complete scorer. Like, I mean, the work that's gone into his game being as complete as it is. There's obviously natural gifts and basketball IQ, but, you know, if you're looking for sort of that lineage between Kobe to LeBron, it's the work. Like, it's there.
Yeah, and I think you can often say that about all the stars, right? They're just different. And that's oftentimes, when it comes to being on the hardwood, what really makes them different and unique is that obsession and that drive, to your point, the evolvement as individual players to be able to last as long but also be impactful all the while. And I think when you talk about that shot, and, you know, as there were so many people wondering what it was going to look like, was it going to be off an assist? Who was it going to be? Was it going to be the skyhook? I'm one to say that I'm glad it wasn't the skyhook, because that's Kareem. That's Cap. That's his shot. That is who he is and what so many have grown to love and know about Cap. This is LeBron. right? And I don't think you could have drawn it up any other way because that is the one shot. I feel like we still, to this point, too, watching games, if it's coming down the stretch, or I remember moments in D.C. or, you know, it was in Philadelphia or Toronto where when he had that setback or that fadeaway going baseline, typically it was like, oh, he's in his zone. And you just knew it was like that moment. And so then I also thought to see Bronny get it on film and obviously see that footage and his own son calling that shot and his son, it just kind of just, it was special. It was Bron. It just felt right.
And the other thing, you know, obviously Andy and I have been talking a lot about this, and, you know, and I'm sure it might have come up, you know, tonight for you guys on your show. You know, this deal that they made, because the other side of Tuesday was the game itself. Like, they lost, and they lost. I mean, I know it was a 3-point game, but it wasn't. They lost that game pretty bad. Like, they were not even close to the better team on the floor. The energy was weird. It felt like, you know, we might be reaching kind of a breaking point here with just the ability to kind of keep on keeping on with this thing. But now, like, there's this fresh infusion of energy with Jared Vanderbilt and Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell, and talk that they might, you know, continue adding between now and tomorrow afternoon. What did you think of the deal, and what do you think it does for them both on the court?
As far as what's being reported so far, nothing official, obviously.
Right, but like, you know, and just like the sort of the just the energy lift that comes from this.
Yeah, I think I'm a big believer, and I actually just told Jovan, because I know he's going to join your show here in a minute, and we just had him on the show, and I was like, I won't steal any of your thunder, because he was awesome when it came to this. But I am one of the mindset, and as I would imagine a lot are, when it comes to, and I'm not trying to be cliche or repeat anything that's already been said, but when it comes to an opportunity to upgrade your roster, one that I think that it is very clear needed to happen, and if the opportunity was there for this Lakers squad to do so, it needed to be done. And I think you look at those areas in terms of, one, at the head of it all, when and if, and it appears Anthony Davis is trending in that right direction of being back and returning back to the form of what we saw, especially at the beginning of this season, that dominant AD presence. You've got LeBron James, who continues to show you what he is capable of and his value, even in season 20 at 38. You have to build around that. And that's shooting, that's wing depth, that's versatility, that's big, that's size, that's guys who can give you versatility defensively, playmaking. It all matters. And I think that for the Lakers, per the reports, as you guys mentioned, if this is to go down and this is to be officially announced, as Jovan said, he gives them an A and a letter grade. And I struggled to think otherwise. I think they made the right decisions and moves in terms of upgrading their roster and giving them the best possible chance to put themselves in a position to compete in the postseason. And I think that's all you can ask for at the end of the day.
When you saw LeBron show up basically dressed as John Wick, Allie, did you know, all right, this thing's happening, right? I think this is over.
You know what's so funny is isn't that just such like the epitome of how we view, like, 2023, that's what it's about. Like, you see it on social media, you see that fit, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's dumb. And the thing that's crazy is, like, any other player or not many players can need 36 points, bet on themselves, throw on a suit of that magnitude.
Right, spend, like, tens of thousands of dollars to fly, like, everyone you've ever met into a building.
And, oh, by the way, make sure that they're out of that city before the next game, so you have no choice. But
right.
Make sure that you go with that record. It is beyond my imagination of how he's able to do that. However, as we talked about on the show last night, since turning 38, he's got 9, I think, 35-point games. He's got 6 40-point games. Like, that was in December, like December 30th. It's not far past him to be able to go out and do it. I just didn't expect it until I saw the suit.
It's just, yeah, it's
I saw
just,
the suit and then the headband.
It's over.
I was like, game, we're done.
Quick question for you. Although we're commercial free until 9, so we've got plenty of time. It could be a long question.
Yeah, commercial free.
I know, right? We're going 38. The station is doing 38,388 seconds of commercial free radio. How's that for a clever idea? Yes, it's been going on since 10 this morning. Commercial free. I am in on Tuesday. Would you prefer I show up in the LeBron suit or the Kuzma sweater?
The pink sweater?
Yeah, with like the with 75-foot long arms.
I'm going the sweater.
I agree. I think that's bad.
What about
actually, can we go a step further? Can you do the coat from Saturday?
I was just about to say that. Have you seen Kuzma's bubble coat?
Oh.
Actually, BK, don't even look at it. Don't even look at it. Just trust your brother. He'll get you all squared away, and yeah. I want you in that.
And
all
right. If I may, I saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wearing some shoes that I think would work perfect.
Oh my God! Have you ever? If you've never seen this, like he is wearing like astronaut boots. Like if you ever wanted evidence that NBA players do not drive themselves to the arena, it was what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was wearing on his feet yesterday. Because you cannot operate a car in those.
Do you guys know what content, what show is being missed right now with all of this wonderful content?
Which show?
Lake Show. Remember that show?
Oh yeah. Perfect for that.
Yeah, we used to be
all the
regular appearances on it.
Yeah. If I can, if I wear the sweater, I expect double pay because the sweater is expensive.
Well, that's not handle, but I will lean into that and embrace that.
Do
you
think if Brian invoices AJ for that sweater, AJ is going to say it's fine?
We have been heavily promoting programming for the last couple of days. So I'm just saying, when he sends out those emails, we tell people where the games are located. So.
Amazing.
All right. You've been at it a long time. You had a long night last night. You were on again tonight. So we appreciate you taking the time to come on with us.
As always, you guys are so fun. Remember, put ketchup on anything and everything, including your beef and noodles, mashed potatoes, and your corn.
All right. Good talk, Allie. Allie Clifton.
And your corn?
Oh, Allie. Allie.
Wait, what?
Oh, your corn.
I'll have it ready for you on Tuesday. You're welcome.
Oh, my God. Allie Clifton. Host of everything on Spectrum Sportsnet and nothing on the Food Network.
Jesus, oh that is... Of all the things you can put on corn, which is basically anything, like almost anything is good on corn. Mayonnaise is good on corn. Cheese is good on corn. Yeah. Like everything is good on corn.
Plus, I mean, okay, I said this before and I stand by it. Mm-hmm. I think ketchup is visually unappealing.
I mean, you're alone there, but okay.
Whatever, fine. Call me a nerd, whatever.
No.
Is mustard okay?
Mustard, love mustard.
Yeah, but like, see? So it's because one's red and one's yellow?
No, mustard has a better consistency.
No, I'm saying
smooth.
You said it looks disgusting. What is the difference other than color between a pile of mustard and
ketchup,
a pile of ketchup?
Ketchup is more watery. It feels like
mustard. Can
I get
be like that
I get watery mustard sometimes.
Yeah.
Not if you shake it up.
Like, ketchup
looks faker to me.
I don't know.
But anyway, the point I was going to make, though,
the
this
point
is
the
dumbest argument I've ever heard about.
I do not want to attack another woman, but ketchup on corn, girl.
And
that
on
is
top
just,
of it,
we
got to
talk
awful.
About that.
You want to talk about visual aesthetics.
It's just weird.
Like, especially if it's like, not on the cob. It's just loose corn in that red.
Well, then you turn it all red and stuff.
We grew up in St. Louis, suburban St. Louis in the 80s and 90s was not necessarily filled with a lot of ways and varieties of corn eating. It was like you got your cob and you got your off the cob.
Yeah, like esquite.
Butter
so
and
like,
salt, right.
Yeah.
But like you come out to L.A. and it's like opens
oh, we
your
know
eyes.
How to do
it.
It
opens
yeah,
your
yeah,
eyes
yeah.
on the possibilities of corn.
Like, yeah, esquite for me is like off the cob, right? With like, depending where you get it, but you can get mayo, cheese, and like cilantro.
Elote.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. Oh. Chile, it's so good.
Yeah, I mean,
none of it is ketchup.
Yeah,
no,
there's so many great ways to dress up corn.
Ketchup
ain't one. Why are you going ketchup?
Yeah, like I said, I'm not trying to attack you, girl, but that's
no,
the,
and we
that's
love the, Allie. Allie's the best.
We should update.
That take is a little sus right there.
Updating the poll. I put it out on Cam Brothers 27 minutes ago. I didn't even say about what. I just said, are you in a better mood now? That's it. Not about the trade, didn't mention anything or whatever. 90.5% yes. 9.5 no. Like again.
The haters.
They just you know exactly what it is. 9 out of 10 Lakers fans are in a better mood. Like this is what people needed was like this, and if they're in a better mood, you know the people in the locker room are in a better mood.
One of the people responding to that Twitter poll at Granted LA, a follower of ours that we've gone back and forth with a lot over the years, fun guy, tweeted out a picture with a t-shirt and Rob Pelinka's photo on it, and it just says F them picks. Well played, granted LA. Well, I mean, that is what people, a lot of people have wanted to see Pelinka have that attitude. And look, we've said all season that Pelinka has needed to be careful with those picks because you can only trade them once, and the Lakers had very few assets that they had full control over right now. So they needed to be smart with how they went about this. So far, I think they've been smart. I like what they've been doing.
That was supposed to say bleep them picks, but it didn't really sound that good.
No. No, at it did all. Not. No, it
you
did
know what?
Not.
One swing and a miss over how many hours have you been doing this now, Laura?
Sorry?
How many hours have you been doing this now?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I started at like... I started 3-ish, 4.
Okay.
You know, it's not that bad.
You got one drop that didn't work. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It does say, but whoever cut this did not cut the... And then just go bleep them picks.
Well, that's on them. That is not on you.
I just got it from the system, and it wasn't edited correctly.
You read what is in front of you.
That is very true. So, like you guys were saying, bleep
them
picks.
Oh, my God. I have that problem. Like, I'm glad. Oh, yes. I am Ron Burgundy.
Okay, I did this, and I hate that I have to admit this on air again, but they play this all the time. So I had to produce, I think this was when LZ was still on here, right? And I was doing something, and I was doing What You Need to Know or whatever. And I said, instead of saying Hank Aaron, I said Aaron Hank. And that will forever just be my biggest bleepery on air, probably.
I think you have more than that.
Hey, thanks, bro.
I've seen you say more, questionable stuff than that.
To me, that's questionable. That was bad.
Nope.
I've
heard you say more suspicious stuff than that.
You're just mad because whatever.
This is why I don't trust people who have two potential names. Like two people with two first names, that's not okay.
It was just, when you're reading something and it's like the last name, comma, first name, and I was just did it for whatever. I was like, blat.
When we used to do the Funchy remembers, like when we had, I don't know where the reads have been, like where our advertisers necessarily have been, when we used to do all the shoe people, and we'd have all the list of the different companies. We had like on the read list, they would say, they'd write Doc Martens as Dr. Martens. So I would get through this read and I'd be like, Dr. Martens.
So you
see, not
me.
Necessarily, it's not coming from the companies and stuff, it's the salespeople and stuff like that.
Yeah, this was.
I'm not going to throw any salespeople under the bus, but yes, we get some questions.
But like,
reads.
It gets to the part where it says in the read, tell story about, tell personalizing story.
I know, in parentheses,
story.
Right? In parentheses,
and so
right?
I say, tell personalizing story.
No, and you know what, though? Like, I used to do VO work at my other stations, and I would be like, y'all, do y'all need help putting the copy together? Because this is so bad. And when you're reading it, we need to sound natural, and the way you guys are putting it together just does not help us. It's crazy.
Quick poll on a scale of 1 to 10, how offensive is corn on ketchup? CC, Real Ally Clifton.
I was going to tag her up.
44% say 10 plus on a scale of 1 to 10. It is actually off the scale.
No, that is horrid, man. Like, my issues with ketchup, notwithstanding, that is disgusting.
I realize, man. The Lakers have made a massive trade that reinvigorates the entire season, and LeBron James just passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to become the leading scorer of all time. This really could consume the last half hour of the show.
Well, Jovan Buha will be joining us in about a minute and a half, covers the Lakers for the Athletic.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe he will.
We're going to bump Jovan.
Is he on the corn beat?
Ask him if he likes ketchup.
Okay,
well, that should be the opening question.
We will ask Jovan. I mean, Jovan's still young. Jovan is young enough that he might really still like ketchup. He's a young man.
Allie responds, "Don't knock it before you try it." No, I will knock it. I have not.
We
tried
will
it.
Knock it, girl. We will knock it. Sorry.
Oh, come on, Allie. Like, Allie, you can do better than this. Like, you're in a great food city. You can. That's the Ohio in you coming through, putting ketchup on food. On a
dang.
I mean, I'm not going to start another restaurant.
I can say this.
Is Lindsay not in front of a radio anymore?
I was going to say some stuff.
Do you never want to work Mason in Ireland ever again?
Sit down on cap. But
I never whatever. Do anyway.
No, you work our show.
Not often.
Well, okay. So I know this is going to come back and bite me in the butt. I already know, but I'm going to do it anyways. We were talking about tacos, and she said Ohio tacos were better than LA tacos, and this just became one of the biggest controversies on air ever. It was crazy.
Okay, here's the thing. Here, I am willing to accept that there is a place in Ohio.
Oh, that I want to hear the name.
No, but that serves tacos that are as good as places out in LA.
What is the name?
I don't know.
Oh,
Ohio's a big
Dave
state.
Dave McMiniman said that was not true.
I'm just Ohio's. Dave McMiniman also thinks the first Space Jam is a great movie. But
better than
and the second one.
There are unquestionably, I'm sure, it's a big state with a lot of people, some good tacos in Ohio.
But better than LA.
But that doesn't mean Ohio has better tacos.
Like I said, I know
LA.
Don't get me in trouble.
Look, there might be some LA transplants who moved to Ohio and started a taco shop.
True.
And those tacos could be as good as anywhere in LA because they were created by LA people.
I agree. And I will say, before somebody jumps me and then gets mad, because I know it's going to come back to Lindsay, she's right. Everybody's taste buds are different and everybody can have their own opinion.
Not different enough to support ketchup on corn.
No, that's true. We're all in agreement.
Nobody's taste buds other than Allie's are
to be
that
fair,
different.
Andy and I grew up, because we grew up in St. Louis, where they have just a tremendous amount of weird food. You know, the pizza's different, everything's different. Like, we do understand that. Like, St. Louis style pizza is incredibly controversial.
It is. It's awesome, but it is for a lot of people an acquired taste. And and I like weird stuff. That's just gross. And again, I will say it because we're from the Midwest. I think that is the Ohio in Allie coming through.
So I asked Greg. I said, Greg, ketchup on corn. He goes, oh, hell no. Absolutely not.
We're up to 74% at 10 plus in terms of the off the charts offensive disgusting scale.
Yeah, 10 plus is right. 10
plus.
Greg is just shaking his head. He's just shaking his head right now.
That's gross.
Yeah, he said that's gross. He doesn't have a mic. I mean, he can jump on one, but yeah.
How long have you been here?
How long have you been here? 7:45 a.m.
Dang.
He also just had a really nice dinner. So
I know. He had a nice dinner.
Oh,
before.
Yeah. You were part of that contingency.
He's getting on a mic because, you know, he's
management.
All right. Hold that thought, Greg, because we've got Jovan Buha joining us right now. Covers the Lakers. For the
As he got on the mic, he's like, oh, whatever, y'all.
There's a bigger name on the other line.
Greg,
go
you've
ahead.
Been, okay. you've been right. bumped.
Don't forget to give Funchy our parking spot.
Our backup guest has been bumped. Jovan's here.
Okay. Have a good one, Jovan.
Jovan, how are you, man?
It's been a week. And by a week, I mean it's been 24 hours, but it feels like a week.
It's just Wednesday, Jovan.
I'm hanging on. I'm trying.
If you are not a subscriber to The Athletic, and if you are not a reader of Jovan's work, you need to be doing that. Some of the best basketball writing that you will find anywhere on the internet. But let's get to the energy was off, I think, to say the least, with the team on Tuesday. It felt, at least watching it from where we were, that they were kind of at a real crossroads here, like where maybe things could go south quickly. What does this trade do for them both on the court in terms of Vanderbilt and Russell and Beasley, but also sort of emotionally?
Yeah. Well, on the court, I think it addresses multiple needs and, you know, that the team was looking to address. You know, they kind of determined that if they weren't going to be landing a superstar of the Kyrie ilk, that they wanted to keep at least one of their first-round picks. They didn't want to trade both of them. So, you know, check for that. They wanted to obviously improve three-point shooting, which continues to be, I think, the number one need for the roster. They obviously did that. You know, Malik Beasley, 36% on almost 9 attempts per game. D'Angelo, 39% on a few attempts per game. And then obviously the front court has been a bit of an issue just in terms of size and length and athleticism. And in Jared Vanderbilt, I think, you know, that might be the sneaky addition of this entire trade. Like, I think, you know, we could come away looking at Vanderbilt as, you know, potentially a core piece of the Lakers moving forward, depending on how he continues to develop. So I think overall, like, you know, adding those three guys, losing Russ, JTA, and Damian Jones, the latter two who just weren't really playing at this point. I think it's a clear upgrade. But to your point about emotionally, yeah, it was just this weird scene last night where you have this historic moment. You have all these celebrities, all these LeBron's friends and family are in the building, and they're celebrating. But at the same time, the Lakers are losing this game, and really we're the Thunder were in control of it for the whole time, and you have the vibe is off with AD. You have Russ getting into it with Phil Handy on the bench, and then Darvin Ham at halftime, and like, I think people knew the writing was on the wall. I think the trade deadline was hovering over everything and really just kind of messing with the energy with the team. But as I reported for The Athletic, the situation between Russ and the Lakers had become untenable, according to multiple people I spoke with today, both with the team and around the league. And I think Russ wanted out. The Lakers were at the point where they no longer wanted him. And I think this kind of became a formality of, we're going to move him regardless of, we'll see where it is. But like, he's gone. He's not going to be a Laker moving forward. So I think it really kind of, went to a breaking point for both sides. And this was kind of the natural resolution, I think. And we had kind of known this was headed this way really since the summer. But I think it took longer than either side expected. But it was kind of an inevitability that they were going to get here. So I think really from both on and off the court, this improves the Lakers. And I think it's hard not to be more optimistic about them for the rest of the season.
Let me ask you something, Jovan. We're talking with Jovan Buha, covers the Lakers for The Athletic. When you mentioned that the situation between Russ and the Lakers had grown untenable, and I recognize by asking this there could be some people listening and laughing at the question, but I think it's an interesting one. What specifically made it untenable? Just because Russ, I do think, was trying to do the things that they wanted him to do in terms of role, even though it clearly wasn't what he wanted to do. And I think there was some professionalism happening. So what specifically do you think made it untenable as opposed to just a bad match?
I think the professionalism started to wane. And I don't want to, I do have a report I'm currently working on, so I don't want to spoil all of it. And that's why
80%. All we're asking for is 80%.
But yeah, I mean, based on what, I've been hearing, that I think in the last week or so, it's just been more of those types of outbursts that he had with, Phil Handy, and that obviously led to a delay of game, which was part of what really upset Darvin Ham and caused him to lay into Russ at halftime, verbally, not physically. But yeah, I think just Russ was, and you also have to, I mean, there's a lot going on. And you had his teammate publicly campaigning for him to be traded, basically. I don't think that went over well with him. And, I think ultimately he was tired of not closing games and coming off the bench and, kind of being asked to do certain things that weren't necessarily at the top of his priority list. So I think that there's, a lot of layers to it. I think a lot is going to come out in the next few days, some at The Athletic, some elsewhere. But I think it just, to your point about him being fully bought in and being a professional, from what I can share, I'd heard that was not happening as frequently over the past week or so. And it had just become a situation where, it was just the tension was rising. And I think the team felt it. The coaching staff certainly felt it, and it just was becoming a situation that it was clear whether he was traded or some other fashion, like the Lakers were going to move on from Russ.
Between Hachimura, who reportedly is somebody who the Lakers are interested in keeping around going into next year, and Vanderbilt's under contract, and Beasley, I think, is player option, team option, I should say. I'm sorry. There's a good chance that at least a few of these players that they've traded for the last couple of weeks could be around next year. So separating that, though, in terms of what this means for them long term and the kind of team they're trying to build, what do they see as the potential sort of upside or top finish or whatever this year, how much do they really think over the last 27, whatever it is, games, 26 games, that this trade can elevate them in the standings to make noise this year?
Their goal is to be a playoff team, and then, you know, once they get in there, they're confident that even if they are a lower seed, a 5 seed, 6 seed, 7 seed, they're confident that, you know, put LeBron and AD in a 7-game series, and you know, they like their chances against most teams. But with kind of just the wide open nature of the West, you know, I don't think this trade obviously rises to the level of front runner or contender, as Rob Pelinka used those terms in his last you know, media availability with us. But also, you know, that was, I think, really when, you know, that language was more so regarding using both picks and not just one pick to upgrade the roster. So, you know, the Lakers managed to keep their 2029 first, which they can use this summer. They could also use tomorrow, but from what I've been told, you know, most likely it'll be a smaller deal if they do make another deal that won't include the first. But I think they look at it as, you know, they improved the roster. They addressed some of the needs. You know, they're a deeper roster. Again, I think replacing two guys who are out of the rotation with two guys who project to be in the rotation. So I think they look at it as just, we have a better roster right now than we did, you know, 24 hours ago. And I think, you know, they're looking at it. Dennis threw out that they want to go 19-9 over the final 28 games. You know, I've heard that from a couple of people. I don't know how realistic that is. I think that is, you know, definitely their ceiling and most optimistic projection. But I think they're looking at it like, we can at least make the play-in tournament and then, you know, make the playoffs via, you know, the 7 or 8 seed. But if they could somehow get to 5 or 6 and go on a little run here, you know, I think that's, they view that as a relative success compared to where they currently are right now.
You know, then the other half of that is like, you know, is this the beginning of the team that they think they can field for next year too?
Yeah. You know, I think that there's going to be legitimate discussion with re-signing and retaining D'Angelo Russell. I think it's ultimately going to come down to his number and is he looking for maybe a shorter term thing where, you know, he can so obviously his value took it's taken a hit over the last couple of years in Minnesota. You know, there's really no other way around it. And this was a guy who came in number 2 pick, you know, with the Lakers, and that didn't necessarily go well, but then I think obviously kind of broke out in Brooklyn and then went to Minnesota in a big trade. And, you know, I think it's kind of lost some of his luster around the league, but I think he gets a second chance in LA. I think, you know, it's a different, sometimes players just need to be in a different situation where, you know, in Minnesota, Karl Anthony Towns is one of his best friends. And then Anthony Edwards comes in, but he's older than him. And like there's, you know, the pecking order and all this different stuff. Like I think coming into LA, he's clearly the number 3 option. And even on some nights might be number 4. So I think, you know, for him, kind of just learning from LeBron and AD, really being, I think, in a winning situation in terms of the locker room culture and the, you know, the leaders of the team actually having won a championship before. I think that could be something that's good for D'Angelo. But, you know, from what I've been told, like, it is going to depend ultimately on the years and the number and what he's looking for. But they are open to re-signing him if he ends up fitting in. And you know, they like the partnership.
Talking with Jovan Buha, covers the Lakers for The Athletic. You know, LeBron has not been shy about letting it be known that he wanted the front office to do something. He was not shy about letting his disappointment be known that they weren't able to swing a deal for Kyrie Irving. How do you suspect what we've seen today and maybe what could happen tomorrow will have LeBron feeling about this season, but also the future with the Lakers?
I think it's going to improve the dynamic. I don't know if it necessarily solves everything and solves some of the damage that has been done. You know, I think with the Kyrie situation and even dating back to the offseason and him obviously pushing for Russ to be traded then and that not happening. So I think there's definitely some tension there. You know, I think it's pretty apparent. But I think this, you know, you can't really say the Lakers didn't, you know, go for it. I think, you know, we don't have to rehash the whole Kyrie situation, but they made a competitive offer. You know, they offered Russ and the 2 picks unprotected. You know, they were scared off by Kyrie potentially leaving and them not wanting to empty the asset cupboard. So they ultimately
you could have
didn't,
just said they were scared off by Kyrie
everybody
would have gotten it.
That works too. But, you know, they didn't want to empty the asset cupboard of, you know, a pick swap or two, and let's throw in Austin, let's throw in Max, and like, okay, well, if Kyrie walks in 3 months, now we've given up basically anything we have of value to trade other than LeBron and AD, and we're kind of stuck with this group now.
Right. No, by the way, you really need to sign Kyrie to whatever contract he wants because you have no other option. That's not a healthy place to be.
Yes. So I think, you know, they pivoted, and you know, I would say they've made two of the better trades that have already occurred, right? Like, I mean, it hasn't been many to pick from, but like, I think they've clearly been active on the trade market. And, you know, I don't know how you guys feel about the trade, but I think this is a win for the Lakers. Again, you know, not having to give up, you know, pretty much any permutation of a Russ deal for months has to be both picks. And for them to be able to not only, you know, only give up one, but protect that one. And if that one, you know, doesn't convey, it becomes a second round pick. Like, I think that's a win for them too, that they were able to put a protection on it. So, I know the D'Angelo fit isn't the cleanest. I think, you know, obviously he's a minus defender, and I think shot selection can be a bit of an issue. And again, I think there's reasons why Brooklyn and Minnesota have been willing to move on from him. But I think there's an addition by subtraction element with getting rid of Russ. I think you improve the locker room dynamics. I think you clearly improve just the spacing and, you know, just sort of the construction of the offense.
He's a better imperfect fit, if nothing
right.
else.
Exactly. And I think he will embrace L.A., you know, the second time around. So, and then, obviously, I mean, to me, the two parts of the deal I love are Beasley and Vanderbilt. Like, those are the crown. I know everyone's going to focus on D'Angelo because of the pedigree, and he was in L.A. before, but, like, Beasley is the type of high-volume three-point shooter the Lakers needed, and Vanderbilt is that type of, you know, lanky, rangy forward who can do multiple things that Lakers, you know, partly got in Rui, but as we have seen, Rui is more of a scorer and a rebounder. I think Vanderbilt is going to do kind of those dirty work things that, you know, you've kind of seen from Wenyen Gabriel, but maybe at a higher level. So I really like those additions to the rotation. And, you know, as far as I think LeBron, again, is going to be happy they did something, but I don't know, you know, maybe this isn't enough in his eyes.
Just we'll let you go here. But like when you said, you know, they might do a couple small things tomorrow, that you're talking about stuff to like clear up the log jam that they have in the backcourt where you have just too many guards, too many, like just to clean up some of what they have on the roster. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah. I mean, Pat and Lonnie are still available. You know, because I think, I mean, really, the Lakers probably have a starting, you know, a new starting backcourt. Like, I think D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley are coming in expecting to start. I think the collective defense between those two might be a little concerning, where you might want to keep one of Pat or Dennis in there more as that perimeter defender. But, you know, D'Angelo is going to start, right? So I think that's for certain. And then it's, you know, a matter of is Malik starting or are they going with, you know, Pat or Dennis as that point of attack defender. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I think, you know, the one thing is you could see something like Pat and Lonnie in like a second, Pat and Lonnie in 2 seconds, Pat in 2 seconds, Lonnie in 2 seconds. Like there are smaller permutations where they could dump one of those guys or flip them, maybe a 2-for-1 style for a front court guy. You know, I think they could still use another wing or big on this roster. So I think that's the thing to look for is, you know, do they do one of those types of deals? But from what I've been told, it's very unlikely that they include a first round pick and look for a more substantial upgrade.
Jovan Buha of The Athletic, read his stuff. All the analysis, everything that he's going to be writing about Russ is something you are going to want to read. I know it's, like you said, it's been an insane last 48 hours or so for you. Thank you so much for giving us the time. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
So Jovan was talking about like getting all that stuff, Andy, for one unprotected first rounder or one lightly protected first rounder. You get Beasley, Vanderbilt, and Russell, and you get to move off of the Westbrook thing, which apparently was becoming more of a thing. Just for reference, in terms of what you're getting here, the Knicks gave up a lottery-protected first-round pick plus three guys, none of whom were particularly interesting except maybe Cam Reddish, for Josh Hart. Good player. But, you know, that's one guy for a lottery-protected first-rounder and three players. The Lakers got three players for one lightly protected first-rounder. You know, so that, from a value standpoint, that's pretty good by comparison. You know, Josh Hart's good, but he's not light years better than Malik Beasley or, you know.
Josh Hart is a better two-way player than anybody the Lakers picked
sure.
today.
Yes.
So in that sense, there's a certain ability to keep him on the floor no matter what situation you're talking about, floor combinations.
Yeah, and he'll help the Knicks a lot, but he's not an all-star.
Look, Rob Pelinka today, you know, I still feel like the jury is out on him in terms of just his overall vision and style as somebody who crafts rosters. But the work he did today, I think was great work.
Better than it is a better outcome than I would have expected.
Yeah. I think he did a really good job improving the team without either giving up too much, but also, and I think this was really important, giving up too much on a potentially bad deal for the sake of looking like you're doing something. Because there had been that pressure for a while where the mm-hmm. Lakers were linked to a bunch of different scenarios where I was like, that is not worth giving up those two picks for. Those are bad deals. And I think Pelinka's done well for himself. I really do.
So we'll see what happens on Thursday. They won't be the new guys won't be around. They are expected to suit up, according to Dan Wojcicki, assuming everybody passes their physicals. They are expected to suit up on Saturday in San Francisco against the Warriors. But I'll check the poll here. We're up over 90% for are you in a bad the quick just simple question. Are you in a better mood now? Comes from our Twitter feed. No explanation, wasn't referencing the trade specific. Just are you in a better mood now? Over 90% of people, yes. People are in a better mood.
I mean, you wanted a reason. I mean, we were talking before about LeBron and AD and the team increasingly looking for reasons to stay engaged, for feeling like they're playing with purpose. Same thing goes for the fans watching. Like, you know, like Laker fans are exceptionally loyal. And, you know, as much as they have this reputation nationally as, like, you know, front runners and everybody just associates the celebrities sitting courtside with the average fan. Like, I can tell you, they're not bandwagoners. They're not front runners. I've bartended in different areas all over L.A., like Pasadena, Santa Monica, Los Villas. Like, I've met Laker fans of all different stripes, and, they care passionately. But they also don't want to feel like they're being, like,
team's
taken
bad.
For granted.
The team is bad. The team has been, save the championship, bad for most of the last decade. And yeah. I understand, you know, the year following the title, 21-6 or whatever it was before everybody got hurt and all that stuff. Like, I'm not saying there weren't mitigating circumstances. Every roster has been a disaster or whatever. But the team's been bad. And so, like, this... What I like about this is, like, you know, Pelinka a couple weeks ago was, you know, talking about, and as Jovan said, maybe he just meant giving up both first rounders, and we'll see if they do anything else before the deadline tomorrow. You know, the Bogdanoviches are rumored always. Those would cost first rounders, whatever it might be. But, you know, Pelinka was very much like, you know, unless this makes us a front runner, he actually used the term front runner,
which felt impossible.
That's the problem. If that's your criteria, that is a moving goalpost that never gets you, like, you go, oh, because what does that even mean? Does that mean you have a 40% chance of winning a title, a 50% chance? Like, how good do you have to be considered a front runner? And so if that's what it is, then you're not going to do anything. And if you're not going to do anything, then you might as well try to figure out a way to get going on rebuilding the thing. But if you have LeBron James... For, you know, I understand he is not of LA, But he's already, I mean, somebody pointed this out to me. I did a show for the Locked On Network, you know, to commemorate LeBron breaking the record. He's played longer in L.A. than he did in Miami. I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but he played four seasons in Miami. He's on his fifth one in L.A. He's been here longer. He is going to play, assuming something weird doesn't happen, he's going to play six or seven seasons in L.A. Eight, maybe eight. Huh. I don't know. And so...
sneaks up on you.
It does. And so if you're going to have him still playing at very, you know, first team All-NBA level, you might as well try to win. And then you add in Anthony Davis and for all of the frustrations, what he's capable of, you're not going to do better than this core for a long time. So you might as well, like you said earlier in the show, Andy, it's going to be ugly either way when you finally have to get around to rebuilding it. So you might as well try to do something with LeBron and AD while you have
it. Or call it quits now.
Right.
Call it quits now. And I'm not saying that this is the correct way to think about it or not. I'm just saying you come to the conclusion that the LeBron AD era peaked early. It's kind of disappointing. Same time you got a championship out of it. But either way, it's not going to get better. So we're going to break it up, get out of it now, and start the rebuilding process from a relatively greater place of strength. Mm-hmm. What you don't want to do is just tread rudderlessly down the middle, because basically you're afraid to make a move in either direction because neither direction feels either strong enough, guaranteed enough, interesting enough to fans, splashing up, whatever. At some point...
what does Mr. Miyagi say about the bug? Like, you know,
squish like,
yeah, or the grape, right?
Yeah. At some point, you have to pick a direction and a purpose with that direction. Mm-hmm. And there were times where it felt like they were staying with LeBron and AD because they were frankly afraid to do anything else. And they were afraid of the relevancy of not having them, but also really afraid to commit to them. If they didn't feel like championship frontrunners, you can't operate like that.
So it's been
a hell of a day.
Heck of a week. Just yeah. A week. Like, you know, I mean, because Tuesday was weird. Tuesday was so weird because the thrill, like if you love like human and athletic achievement, watching LeBron break this record was incredible. You think about everything it goes into. You see, we talked about with Ali earlier in the hour, like, all the stuff that goes into becoming LeBron James, the odds of that happening and the people that were important to him there. Like, this was a really cool thing. Like, this was really cool. But the game itself was depressing and it felt like something broke.
Well, you know what it reminded me of a bit? Remember the last couple seasons Kobe was on the roster? There was an element of sideshow to him being there, like to destroy.
Right, don't look behind the curtain.
Right. And, you know, Kobe's last game was obviously a showing for the ages, and it was incredible. We were in the building for that, and it was amazing to watch. And Kobe put on like a only Kobe could have done this type of performance.
I actually, in hindsight, because you were able to enjoy it more, enjoyed that game more than 81. 81 snuck up on you. This one was like, it started going and you were like, it was just a fun, it was going to be a fun night anyway.
And there was, oh, there was in some ways though, that game had an awkward dynamic because everybody on the court, like Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell, and like everybody is going out of their way to feed Kobe on every single possession because they know that's what the crowd wants. Mm-hmm. And like, you're getting booed if you dribble more than twice.
Are you not entertained?
Right. And that's great in a game that has no stakes other than you just want Kobe to get a W for his last one. Yesterday had stakes, and there was an awkwardness to it because nobody right. seemed to know how to play, or beyond LeBron's record, like, what are we even playing
and so,
for?
Right, and so now you look at this thing. I don't know. Look, if I'm a betting person, you know, they're going to lose tomorrow night. You know, that's a tough game. I don't care if they have the whole full roster and they're playing well. It's Milwaukee. They're really good. They've won eight straight, nine, you know, and this is one of the best teams in the conference. But that's it. Like there's the potential for a happy ending here that, I know, phrasing, but But like, it wasn't there at the beginning of the week, and certainly wasn't there Tuesday.
No, it felt like the mood was just increasingly getting worse. And as you noted in the poll that we put out at Cam Brothers, people are happy right now, and this is awesome. It's a great way to now be able to think about everything LeBron
did yesterday. And to finish 38,388 consecutive seconds of radio.
Yes, what an achievement for this station.
Plus.
That was absolutely.